Welcome back to the Bird's Nest Podcast. We're super excited that everyone once again is tuning in to episode 2 of the Bird's Nest Podcast. And so we hope that you continue to like, subscribe, and share with local parents, single parents. It really doesn't matter. Anyone you think that this information can benefit or assist, please like, subscribe, and share. Just to give a quick recap of episode 1, in episode 1 we really talked about our solo journeys leading up to our I do's and basically some of the ins and outs, some of the backgrounds about who we are and why we may move and think the way that we do. But definitely we hope that you received it well and that it most likely even helps or benefits you as you continue to find who you are and maybe even continue to start to court and date someone that you would like to spend the rest of your life with. But that really leads us to episode 2, which is really a powerful episode, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. This episode is all about Micah's world and about how navigating the autism spectrum with him, how it really changed the dynamics of our family, of our parenting style, how we had to unlearn a lot of traits that we picked up from how we were raised and really learn to adapt to meet the needs of our son. So we're really hoping that this resonates with many other neurodivergent families. Perhaps some of you know people who might also be on the autism spectrum. And if so, then I'm sure a lot of what we say will probably resonate with you. And we're really eager and excited to jump into this episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You really explained it well. But I think we do definitely just start with the journey and that receiving that diagnosis. Do you remember even prior to receiving the diagnosis, maybe were there certain things that you noticed that showed you that Micah processed the world a little bit differently?
Oh, yeah. Well, the interesting thing with Micah was that at his checkups, he was hitting his milestones. For the most part, he was excelling. But there was the speech. At his 2-year-old checkup with his pediatrician, she was like, he should be speaking 200 words or 100 words.
I think I remember you
telling me this. And I'm like, well, he speak like 6 words.
I think I remember you telling me this when we were dating.
Yes, yeah. yes. Yeah. And because, you know what, it wasn't even the 2-year-old check. It was the 3-year-old checkup because we were dating at that time. Yeah. It was, he had just turned 3. Okay, this was in 2020, June, okay. And he just turned 3, and I had noticed this, and I'm like, I'm very concerned. You know, he's 3 years old. He has his own little language, the way he, and you know, he talked with, so like, he knew what he was saying.
Yeah.
But the only words he would speak was up, juice, please, what else was he saying? He would say, up, please.
Baby.
Baby. Everybody was baby. I was baby. You was baby.
My mom and dad.
Everybody was baby, okay? Everybody was baby. So, I mean, he was very limited in his vocabulary. And he did have really, 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 really bad meltdowns, which at the time I took for being tantrums because, you know, what they say about the terrible twos.
Yeah.
So that's really what I saw, you know, at that point with him being 3 years old.
Yeah. And I think if I'm just, you know, looking at it from, you know, obviously when we finally did get married, obviously it was the matter of speech, right? It wasn't really something that he really did, you know, was really doing much of, and like you said, the very simple things. And so definitely, I think from just that aspect, I didn't know what to really think. Obviously, I worked at the hospital, and that was actually one of the departments that I worked for. But in each case, it always looks different.
Yeah.
And so it never looks the same. You can have some who are on the spectrum and, you know, can be very fluent in their speech. And so, I don't know, I guess it was just hard to really, you know, process. But you could tell that, you know, he was just seeing the world differently from the way we may have experienced it.
And I want to put this out there. Because, again, at his checkup, I did mention that to his pediatrician. Because I wanted to have him evaluated for services to help him with his speech. I assumed it was just a speech delay.
Okay.
But I did mention to her, because I had this conversation with his paternal biological grandmother, and she mentioned to me how Micah's biological father didn't start speaking until he was four. Mm-hmm. I discussed this with the pediatrician, and she said, well, then most likely he will start speaking around that time too. So what happened? She felt it was not necessary for me to go ahead and get him evaluated. I took what she said. I'm not trying to, like, you know, throw her under the bus or anything like that. I always praised her for being a great, you know, doctor and what she did. I take responsibility in not seeking a second opinion. And I'm going to just say that. Would it have been nice to be encouraged to still seek that, you know, that evaluation? Yes. But me being his mother, I'm the one who ultimately decides what I'm going to do. And I decided to take her word at the time. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So had I got him evaluated sooner, this most likely would have been a whole different conversation, you know, because his journey would have started a lot sooner, I feel, with services.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I know we, you know, obviously we had got married, you know, we had obviously, not obviously, but to you guys listening, we had some long nights and some deep conversations.
Yeah, we did.
A lot of times they weren't, you know, they weren't rainbows and sunshine. Mm. Sometimes they were difficult, you know, conversations, which, you know, I could definitely admit to and take accountability on that. A lot of time I probably wasn't reasonable, and a lot of that was probably due to my upbringing and my background, which I take full accountability for. But eventually, working in the hospital, just to give a quick background, working there at Children's Hospital and being a part of the department, I've worked with families, and the wait time to get into that department was crazy. I've had some families where they were even encouraged to not even call back until their child hit a certain age, then submit an application for the testing, which would then sometimes take up close to a year before you even get an appointment. And then the appointment might be a year out.
Wow.
And so I know it was definitely a blessing in disguise, because I just, you know, we both were like, look, let me just send an email to my program manager at the time. And I did. And she got us in, maybe within like 6 months.
Was it even 6 months?
It might have been shorter than that.
I feel like it was definitely shorter than that.
Yeah.
Because he got diagnosed when he had just turned four.
Four. And so
we was went he, from a, no, did he?
Yeah, it was around four. Yeah,
five, yeah, six, he seven. Just, he yeah. just turned, he, yeah. He didn't just turn four. He was about to turn five. It was in April. It was in April of 2022.
You know why that's true? And that is true, because I, now that my memory is being jogged again, you're right. Because for a year, we were doing it on our own. We were going through Jess.
Miss Jessie. We had a great resource.
Yeah.
We had a, I mean, she's amazing, amazing resource. She does virtual classes. She's located in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Shout out to New York again. y'all gonna get these shout outs a lot, okay? So she's from Brooklyn, Miss Jessie. She offers like virtual classes and even one-to-one support. Mm-hmm. For children and during like the early childhood stage. And she has been a teacher for many years, but now she offers these services. So she helps with like the academics, the counting, the shapes, the colors, the reading. She was the one
Yeah, she was the
who
one.
Said to us, have you ever considered having Micah evaluated for autism? And when she said that, I kid you not, it was like a light bulb went off in our heads. It mm-hmm. made so much sense. Everything just clicked.
Yeah.
And we jumped right on it. As soon as she said that, we jumped right on it. And just to throw a shout out to Miss Jessie, because we forever will hold her as like a part of our our family. Her Instagram handle is the_reading_playground. Her name is Jessie Larcher. Again, the_reading_playground. Highly recommend her.
Yep.
Highly recommend her. Absolutely amazing.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And so with her, really, you can say, put the fire underneath us, so to speak. And so reaching out to my program manager, was able to get Micah in. And like I said, blessing in disguise had to be, you know, had to be a blessing, because we were even able to get scheduled with the department lead at the time.
Yeah.
Nathan Blum. And so he's the one that actually oversees the whole department of child development and behavioral specialists. So that was like a blessing to have someone who is highly recommended, who really knows the ins and outs of autism to the best of their ability, because autism is definitely still something that many individuals, you know, we continue to learn more and more about every day. But when receiving that, though, Brittany, and I'll talk about it for myself, but when you receive the official diagnosis and now you know exactly what it is and what we're dealing with, how did you feel?
So leading up to everything, and again, this is for those of you who don't know, I worked in special education back in New York for 8 years. I worked as, in Philly, you would be called like a one-to-one or an aide. But in New York, you called a para, like a paraprofessional. So I worked as a para for 8 years, and I probably worked at like maybe 50 schools. I'm not even going to lie. Like, I worked at many schools because I was a sub. So I got around, and I had many students who were autistic. I had many students who had all kinds of different disabilities and needs. And even then, I did not foresee that my own child would have autism. I didn't picture that. I don't think many parents do, especially if you're not aware that it possibly may run in your family. So if you don't have that foreknowledge, you go into it, you become a parent, you kind of envision a certain life for your child all the way up into adulthood. And that was not in the equation whatsoever. So, but again, it made sense to me when I started looking back and thinking about things and certain behaviors with Micah. And I said, you know what? I can't deny that. I can't deny it. So in my mind, I went in expecting it. But then when I heard it, it was like, man, it knocked the wind out of me. It knocked the wind out of me, because it's like, you know, I hate to make this comparison, but it's kind of like, you know, when people, they start feeling certain things, they immediately start going on Googling all this stuff. The next thing you know, they're like, oh, I'm dying. You know, It's like the worst thing. It's like, you're not dying. Like, get off of WebMD. You're not dying, you know. But then imagine you start suspecting the worst, and then you go in, and then you hear it is exactly that thing. Like, that's crazy. So for me, it was almost like a bit of grieving. Mm-hmm. I had to grieve the life that I thought my son would have and that I knew he wasn't gonna have. Okay. And then also, and this may sound a little weird, a sense of relief.
Because same for me, yeah.
You had a sense of relief too?
Yeah, I definitely had a sense of relief, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay, that's good.
That's probably the reason why you would look at me at certain times. You would ask me like, "Yo, what's your thoughts about it?" I'm like, "All right, we got to get to work." I'm like, "All right, we know," because it was like more of that sense of relief.
It just made sense.
It made sense. And then now I know it was almost as if, like, it was a quote, and I wrote this quote down, and I just want to say it. It says, sometimes having an answer doesn't bring peace right away. It just begins to work. Okay, and that for me was like the process. And I would tell you that a lot. I would say that a lot. Like, it's just work. Let's get to work.
Yeah.
I think that was really my introduction into podcast listening, because you would always say, like, AJ, you got to look it up. You got to know about it. You got to read about it. I'm like, all right, I am. I'm like, I'm doing it the way I think I know that's beneficial to me.
Yeah.
That's when I came across More Than a Dad podcast with some guys from my neighborhood that was, you know, going through some of the things that they were talking about as dads. And then listening, and obviously not all podcasts are, as this podcast is going to be, and that is clean, you know, family friendly, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these podcasts did have some, you know, words that obviously are not befitting for us to want to listen to or even have our children listen to. And so that was what really, like, prompted me to, like, try to start that podcast that I had, which was Dad's Corner. That eventually now turned into this, which I'm super excited about because I get to share this journey with you. But really, that's what really my thought process, and even to this day, my thought process is it's a sense of relief because now I know, because now I don't have to go through life assuming or
wondering
and raising him in a way.
Mm.
But now I know I can, my discipline, my training, my rearing of Micah can be calculated because I know exactly what it needs.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
So yeah, for me it was a relief. I did cut you off, I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. You didn't. No, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that you felt similar to some of how I felt too at the time. Cuz I'm sure it was a lot for you to probably wrap your head around as well. It wasn't only autism that he was diagnosed with.
Mm-mm.
He was diagnosed with ASD, autism spectrum disorder. He was also diagnosed with mixed receptive expressive language delay disorder, AKA his speech delay, right? And how he processes, and then also how he processes language, but then also how he expresses language, and then also global developmental delay, which basically means an individual has delay in more than one area. So that could be social, that could be motor skills, that could be cognitive, that could be developmental. So he had delay in several areas, and then also hyperactivity, which later on, I think like last year or the year before, we got officially diagnosed as ADHD, which we pretty much knew.
Yeah, we pretty much
knew. He had ADHD. They was
pushing P. they was for sure pushing P, man. They was pushing them pills. They like, you.
They
you
were like, oh, do you, yeah, do you work? You know, many parents have considered going this route with a, you know, medication. We'd be like, oh, that's nice, thank you. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not knocking anybody who has gone that route for their child. Listen,
because in some cases, that's needed for some children.
Seriously, do what you have to do. You know your child. You know what's in their best interest better than anyone else. At this time, we just needed time to process. And we want to always make sure that we try every avenue. For us, we consider taking medication as like a last resort. So for us, we're like, let's just exhaust every avenue first before we have to turn to that, you know, again to that route. But yeah, for me it was like a blow. I remember hitting up Nova. She took me out for tacos and drinks that night, and I was so glad because I just needed to vent. I needed to clear my mind. I needed to get a load off, and then after that, we just got straight to work.
And I think too, going back a little bit before we move on to the next segment, was the relief aspect really settled in for me too, because like, when, and I could be saying this wrong, and you can correct me, but like when they gave us the breakdown, so to speak, of how the age that he is currently at and then cognitively mm-hmm. where he's at. And then I think that also provided a relief because it's now, and it's like I didn't have to treat Micah, or it was helping me to understand that I couldn't treat Micah at the age that he was at.
Yeah, and they said he was cognitively like a 2-year-old.
Yeah, so I had to like, okay, mm-hmm. cool. How would I handle someone who was at that age?
Yeah,
and best believe, and that we'll get into those segments where we break down our own, you know, feelings towards everything. But just as a highlight for myself, I know I made a lot of mistakes because I know in my head I wouldn't treat any 2-year-old that way. But when you're a parent and you're around someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, working from home, you know, a lot of times you can just like your background can just pop up sometimes. But that was still, going back to the subject at hand, it was a relief to me because I knew what I was working with and what I was dealing with and what he needed at that time. And so I think that's what really helped me out in having that sense of relief. But if I had to go to just the next thing being the highs and lows, because there are, you know, despite Micah being on the spectrum, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to individuals who are on the spectrum, are there things in that you come across, and you spend most of the time with them, Brittany, homeschooling him, which you'll talk more about, but are there things that like stand out to you that makes him shine, that makes him like Michael who he is and things like that?
Oh, Mike is a funny kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Mike is a funny kid, and a lot of times you don't know what he's going to say next.
That's a scary thing.
It's a scary thing.
Like, you don't know what he heard,
you don't
what
know
he picked
what
up.
He's going to do. You don't know what he's going to say. Sometimes you want him to see you. You would like if he would greet someone that we know, not just some stranger, someone that we know that he is very familiar with. And it would be nice if he can give them a greeting, even if it's just a handshake, because we don't force him to give somebody a hug. We let him decide with that, you know, so that he's comfortable. But, you know, I mean, the boy is like, no. But then a random stranger, he'll go up to give them a hug, kiss them on the hand. We like, yo, what?
Like that old sister at the assembly, at the regional convention. Like, that's my grandma. It's like,
and
you don't know this lady from a can of
pictures with her,
like,
kissed her on the cheek. Or that's how he was in a Mexican restaurant in New York with Vic and Annette and Danny and stuff in them. Remember?
I remember being there.
And then I said that the couple behind us.
Oh, yeah.
That
he tried to eat the food off their plate.
No, wait a second. He did eat the food off their plate. I said that they look like the couple from the movie Up.
He said that, yeah.
And he, Michael, legit thought that that old man was the man from the movie Up. And he kept staring at them and then waving and smiling. Then he got up and started talking
Not
to them.
Boy,
and then he
started
calling them grandma and grandpa. Then he gave them a hug and a kiss on the cheek. Next thing you know, he was eating the nachos.
But then act like he don't know Vic. Then act like he don't know Vic.
He act like he don't know nobody. And then he didn't even want to leave the restaurant because he didn't want to leave them. He was sitting next to them, talking to them. I'm like, oh my goodness, this boy.
That's definitely something like Micah can definitely surprise you with a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I say this jokingly. I've said this to you, but I say it very jokingly. I be sometimes wishing like we can go back to the days when the boy was only saying up and do, because you never know what he's going to say. And sometimes he just don't stop.
No, he don't stop. He can talk. He's making up for all those years that he was not talking. He's making up for all those years. We always crack up about that. I'm like, wow, you had all this inside of you. All that time, you had all this going on, all these words, and you just wanted to get it out. Man, he's so observant. He is so observant, and he has a really good memory.
Yeah.
He remembers little details of things that happened a year ago, 2 years ago.
Yep.
Like, he legit remembers. And I just look at him stunned, like, you remember that?
Yeah, his ability to process and retain is really there.
Yeah.
but you know, and that's some of the highs that we experience, just like most parents you also experience with your children. But just to go a little bit deeper with some of the lows at times, I think something that I think about all the time, I think one of the biggest moments for me, and I think Miss Jess really helped us out with this, was that time we went to the beach. I don't know why this all, like, that. I feel like Micah has always had meltdowns, but this meltdown in my mind just always, like, stays with me, and I always think about it, was the meltdown that he had at the beach that day.
I don't even remember that. And we were leaving,
and
like, our first beach day?
Yeah. It was just me, you,
and him. As a family?
Yeah, as a family. Yeah, Levi wasn't even born yet, or even you weren't even pregnant. And he had this meltdown at the beach. We were leaving, and I just remember him going off. Like, he had this meltdown. He was going off in public.
Because he didn't want to leave?
Yeah, partly because he didn't want to leave, and then partly it was just, like, one of those episodes that Micah was having. And I remember how I responded and how it was coming off, and I was just, like, looking around. I felt like at that time the world was just looking at us and, like, could see deep into our soul. But it was something that Ms. Jess has said that really stuck with me. And she said, you should never feel sorry for, you should never feel embarrassed or sorry for the way your child is. Like, I shouldn't be embarrassed. Like, knowing Micah is on the spectrum, I shouldn't be embarrassed by that. And I shouldn't let other individuals make me feel embarrassed about that. Mm. In a way. I can't think of the actual quote she said, but that's like the gist of it. And I think for me at that time, seeing him, that was like a low for me, because I'm gonna be honest, I was embarrassed because I felt like maybe people looked at me like I wasn't a good enough parent. Mm. They expected me maybe to respond or act a certain way. Mm-hmm. That I didn't. I just allowed him to have that meltdown. It was just like, all right, we still gotta leave regardless. We still gotta go about our day, Micah. Like, it's not going to be, you know, always the way you want it to be. But I think that just, that always has stuck with me. That moment stuck with me. And then just remembering what Jess said. And like now, like when we go out in public, and sometimes Micah doesn't have these meltdowns like that now. Not from my experience. I would assume not from your experience really like that. Would you say?
No.
Not like that. Mm-hmm. How he used to when he was younger. But
yeah,
that's always stuck with me outside of the meltdowns. Mm-hmm. When Micah does go out, and he is playing with other kids. And sometimes mm-hmm. these kids may not be able to process or understand who Micah is and his personality. I don't feel embarrassed by that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay with it. And it's like, well, it's either you don't understand and we can assist you to understand, or it is what it is. And I'm not going to feel ashamed for you as a kid not understanding my child. I'm not going to feel ashamed by that.
Yeah. I definitely don't feel ashamed anymore either. I wouldn't say I felt ashamed. I think at many points I felt judged.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
not ashamed, but like I felt like, I guess I felt worry of being judged, because in our community, mm-hmm. when you see a child acting up, what is the first scene that comes to mind?
Beat them.
Yeah. Are you like, oh, that parent ain't beating them. That parent ain't disciplining them. And I'm like, you know, or also too, I used to have this fear of, well, the boy's got to get disciplined somewhere. So it's either going to come from home or it's going to come from someone else. So that's how I kind of used to have this mentality of things. And now I see a parent on the floor in the grocery store trying to calm down their child that is probably twice their size. I do not judge. I look and I do not judge, because I do not know what that parent is going through. I do not know what that parent has tried. I do not know what that child is going through. I do not know what that child is dealing with. I don't know. And the best thing that I could do is maybe offer support, offer help or whatever, and, you know, or just keep it moving. And I think now what I feel is a different kind of worry. I think that now I experience this anxiety when we go to certain, like the playground for me causes me a lot of anxiety because I wonder and worry if someone will misunderstand him. And I don't mean like misunderstand him like they don't understand what he's saying or they don't understand what he's talking about. I mean like they can really misinterpret a situation with Micah because Micah is very susceptible. He can be very impressionable. He will, you know, if you do a certain thing, he'll assume in most times, okay, this is just how we interact. This is how we engage. I'm going to do whatever it is you're doing. And a case in point of this would be 2 years ago when we were at the playground. I'm so glad to this day I was being very, very attentive. We were having a picnic. Was it 2 years ago? It might have been just last year, actually. It was last summer. It was last summer because I had already had Levi. We were at the playground. We had that picnic. Okay. And he went to play with, you know, some little kids. It was a little girl there. I would say she was around his age. Her name was Sophia. Sophia. I got your number, little girl. Sophia. And he was with her, and they were about to do, like, some monkey bars. And when he was climbing up, like, the little steps to get to the monkey bars, I saw this little girl hit my son's butt. And I watched, and I sat up, and I wanted to see what was going to happen next. And he just looked at her, and I guess he laughed because I guess he thought it was, like, funny. And she was laughing. And then he tried to, you know, they kept playing and whatever. And then I saw her do it again. And so at that point, that's when I got up and I walked over and I sat at a nearby bench. And then she like hit him and then it kept playing and then he hit her. And then that's when she came running over to me and Micah followed and Micah was laughing. And she said, "Your son, he hit my butt. He's been hitting my butt." And I said, "Uh-uh, little girl. Mm-mm." I said, "You see that little patch of green right over there? I was sitting right over there, and I watched you guys play from the moment he first came over to you. And I watched you hit my son's butt, not once, but twice." "Oh, but he hit me." And I said, "Yeah, he hit you after you hit him." "I'm going to tell my mom." I said, "Go ahead and tell your mom. I'll tell your mom for you. Where's your mom at?" And she went running off. It's so for me, what worries me is my son in situations like that being taken for granted, but also like him just also being misunderstood, you know. And I think that that's
like one of the lows is yeah, you know, you have the highs, but
that's where I struggle now.
Yeah, is the misunderstanding, because like you said, like, yes, Micah is very you know, sustainable to, you know, really you know, have like a herd mentality where it's like wherever the masses are moving, then I'll do the same. And that's just part. And that's just part because we as adults, you know, who may not be on the spectrum, we are the same. We can have a herd mentality sometimes, following along whoever's taking the lead, and we can sometimes make bad decisions or good decisions. And so it's a part of him just being a kid, and then you know, ultimately. But when you couple that with, you know, where he stands and being able to explain himself, which can be difficult at times, that can be a low because you want him to be able to express himself and explain himself and for us to tell us. Because sometimes, like you stated, in that situation and even other times here in the home is, you know, we'll be in a room and Levi will be crying and we'll be like, "Micah, what happened? What did you do?" And he just will stand there and he's like, you're like, "All right, you have to tell me what took place."
He just be looking guilty.
And the thing is, he looking guilty and he may and have he not did, done nothing.
Yeah, and he didn't do anything, but he just looks guilty.
And that's the scary thing. That's a low. That's a real low because I think that's part of the reason, which really leads us into our next segment of like where, you know, asking you, you know, as far as like how you feel about like what is the emotional toll when it comes to the day-to-day interaction with Micah, but like, that's a difficult thing to deal with as a parent, and especially as a father. And I'm going to say especially because it's a mother too. It's not just dad, because mothers also equally feel the same thing. But as a dad, I feel a certain type of way to be raising a little black boy, and that's on a spectrum, that you do interact or come across situations like you're speaking of, or if he was in school, and it's like Micah's going to always either accept the blame when the blame is not on him because he thinks it's the right thing to do, or he's not going to say anything, which then makes him look guilty.
Or if he thinks that's what you want to hear.
Yeah. And that's a low, because I don't know how to interpretate that. And it's like, I want you to be upfront with me, honest, but it's like, cognitively, do you understand what I'm requesting? But just to stay on that a little bit, I know I'm skipping over a segment, and I'm just going to jump to yours real quick, though, Britt. But I just want to ask, like, how is it that, because I know I've heard you speak about this in the past, when it comes to situations where Micah may be quiet or slow to respond when homeschooling, and maybe having teachers being like, seeing it as he does not understand, when really, you know, it could just be, it's him taking some time to process and to respond. Like, how do you deal with that emotionally, knowing that Micah is cognitive enough to understand and answer the question, but doesn't? Like, how do you deal with that emotionally? And how does that, like, you know, what are some of your fears and things like that?
It can definitely be frustrating, because I've seen a lot of the improvements that he's made, and I've seen what he's capable of. But, you know, there was a time, and I want to say it was probably when he was from 5 years old to six, he would go mute. He would just, there would be moments where he wouldn't talk.
Yeah, that selective mutism.
Yeah. He would just go mute. And I'm telling you, it could last for 30, it could last for an hour. When we took him to first be evaluated for ABA, was a 2-hour evaluation. The boy was silent for the entire 2 hours. The moment we left, he started talking.
Not a word.
Not a word came out of this boy's mouth. He was quiet the whole 2 hours because he just did not know her, the evaluator, although she was super sweet.
Yeah, she eventually became his ABA specialist. That was McKenzie.
Was it McKenzie?
It was McKenzie.
That was McKenzie. Oh, okay. the boy was quiet. He was quiet. Yeah. He didn't. No. It wasn't.
It wasn't McKenzie?
No. It was one of his, but she did become his BCBA, his first BCBA, I think. We have it on video. We'll look back on video. But boy, I mean, he was quiet. So there was dealing with those moments when he would just be mute, right? For like class, with his teachers, with his services, quiet, right? So that could be very challenging, especially like, let's say you're receiving speech services. If you're not talking, it's kind of hard to help you with your speech if you're just deciding not to talk. But Micah had his reasons, and some of which we'll understand and some of which we probably will never understand, but he always had his reasons. So those moments could be very frustrating, especially, let's say, if he had a test. Mute. We had to reschedule that test and go through the whole thing all over again. So it was moments where it was tricky. And then I remember he used to take social skills class with Miss B. I was not a fan of Miss B. I'm sorry, Miss B. Was not a fan. Nothing against Miss B. I don't think that she was. I think she'd been in the game for so long that she became very comfortable with her teaching techniques, and was probably not
equipped
to be able to be adaptable to meet children with where they were at. So Micah was in social skills, and it was just him and another boy who was nonverbal. Micah at this point was talking.
Yeah.
He was mostly verbal, okay? And then again, he's in a social skills class with someone who's nonverbal. I could see how this is very, very encouraging and helpful for that other student. And but it was a little bit confusing for Micah. There were times where she would ask them questions about identifying objects in the picture. She's asking him to identify a bowl of cereal. Micah did not eat cereal. He ate oatmeal. So Micah would sit there and just stare. She would ask him, show him a picture of like a lawnmower. He don't know what a lawnmower is. We don't use a lawnmower because our landlady has people who do that for us. So we don't have to worry about that. Okay. So it was just a matter of, you know, and then it would be translated as, oh, he's lacking in speech or he's lacking. And it was never any of those things. It was a matter of, okay, this is his environment. This is what he's been exposed to. This is his experience. So if he can't relate to the things that you're trying to have him identify, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to get anywhere. So let's start with things that he does know and build off of that, because he can tell you about that. So those were just some of the things that were, you know, frustrating in that sense. Okay. But that was like in the earlier stages, yeah. I would say, of homeschooling, you know. And just to put this out there, because I feel like someone's going to ask this question, we did not do early intervention. And the reason for this is because when Michael was diagnosed, he was 4, but he was literally like, what, April, May, June? He was 2 months away from turning 5. And early intervention, once you turn 5, like, that's it. That's the cutoff. Yeah. At least here in PA. I don't know what the standards are for other states. I can't speak for other states. But out here, you hit 5. Like, that's it. You're preparing for kindergarten. And at that point, be ready to do the work on your own. And mm-hmm. that's what we did. We did the work on our own. We got him set up with ABA. I know ABA is controversial in the autism community for many people. You got 50% are against it, 50% are for it. My husband touched on this before. We're raising a little black boy. For us, we consider the fact that he has 2 things working against him. Mm-hmm. Okay? Being a little black boy who's going to become a grown black man in this country, and the fact that he has an invisible disability. For us, we felt ABA was helpful for our son. If you don't feel that it's helpful, or you don't agree with that for your child or for yourself, you got to do what you got to do within the best interest of your situation. That's all I'm going to say on that. For us, this is what we felt was the best interest for our son. And then through his mm-hmm. virtual school, we got set up with speech, and then we got set up with social skills, and then we got set up with OT, which is occupational therapy.
Yep. And so definitely we will also too will drop some of those things in the description of this episode. That way, if you know, do have any questions or some of those resources, they'll be provided there at the bottom for you to touch base with, and even reaching out to us via Instagram too. We're active on there, so we can always, you know, DM you and give you some of the resources. But definitely I think the way you explained it was really really astute and just really abreast of what's going on. And so just, I guess, briefly just asking you, just so that you can somewhat like wrap it all up and give other parents something to really feel comfort in, is what advice would you give to other parents or even other mothers who are considered the educator, the teacher, the facilitator, the advocate for their children who may be on the spectrum or really have any other type of diagnosis? What would be advice, something that they could take away from them right now? What would that be for them?
Well, for one, if you're unsure if your child might have a diagnosis or a delay, because just because they have a delay doesn't mean it's always an official diagnosis. Seek maybe not only one opinion, but there's nothing wrong with seeking a second opinion as well, and be attentive to these things. No one knows your child the way you know your child. Some people will dust a lot of things off and say, oh, it's not a big deal, or I've seen that a million times, or you're just diagnosing them. Don't give them, don't brand them. And I've heard it all. You know your child. There is absolutely nothing wrong with, you know, seeking a professional opinion. Mm-hmm. And also, too, I highly, highly, highly recommend networking with other neurodivergent families. We probably learn more from other families
absolutely
than we did from doctors and teachers. And I that's, you know, word is bond. I put that on everything. So, you know, that's the only thing that I would say. And don't think that just because they receive a diagnosis means that they're not your child. They are still 100% your child. Absolutely. But I'll talk more on homeschooling, you know, in full detail, like why we chose to do the homeschooling route and what it looks like for us. If I recommend it, if I don't recommend it, we'll talk about that another time, because that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, you really definitely, you know, you really had took on a lot when they came to get him set up with the homeschooling and things like that. And you had some good help with another person who was also looking to get their children into homeschooling through that facility. But definitely, I think those are some good points. I think that was a good recap of really what, like, you know, what you felt and what your emotional state was. And if I'm just like sitting here thinking about mine and listening to you, at least for me, I grew up in, obviously, as we always talk about, I grew up in like a man up generation, so to speak, you know, with like with my father and like, you know, the way he was raised and so forth. And so for me, I guess like, you know, the way I had to really somewhat rewire, and even to this day, because I still make mistakes, I still do it at times, but like trying to rewire how to get rid of those common phrases, so to speak, like man up or stop crying. Because I knew how those phrases can feel, you know, you're being controlled, so to speak, but also can create an emotional shutdown in a child. And, you know, I, at the time, you know, I could speak up for myself and I could express myself. But when I sit here and I think about it and I'm listening to you and I'm just thinking about, you know, using those certain type of phrases like stop crying or man up, it's like, even to this point, yes, Micah, it has a very extensive and a very, you know, a thorough, I would say, vocabulary. Mm. There is still having a vocabulary and being able to emotionally express yourself is still different.
And comprehend.
Mm-hmm. And so, like I deal with and sitting here thinking, it's like I can't really use those statements and I don't want to use those phrases, so to speak. Because it's like, not only am I, you already struggle with expressing yourself, but then now I'm shutting you down on top of that.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like, well, I want to express myself by means of crying or maybe by means of this lash out. Mm-hmm. This is the way I'm expressing myself because I don't know how to say it. But now I shut that down. So now it's like, I got this itch I can't scratch. Mm. And so it just made me think about that because I knew how it made me felt when I was growing up. Those are things that like I want to definitely work on and getting away from. And it was never me doing that out of anger. It was more out of a habit, you know, because that's what I heard, you know, growing up and things like that. And so, but I think what is helping me a little bit is realizing that Micah at times is not being difficult, but he's just really trying to find ways to express himself. And so I think for me, it's like breaking cycles as far as like not repeating what was done to me.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to breaking cycles, I think it's more than just saying, you know, you're not going to do those things anymore, but being able to admit that you did those things, even if that is to your child, a 7-year-old, admitting that you were wrong and that things need to be readjusted, and then making those adjustments and taking accountability.
Yeah.
That's what breaking the cycle means. It doesn't mean just changing, but you have to rectify and continue to do so that you can continue to be someone that is making progress moving forward, especially with someone that may be on the spectrum, and really just redefining, you know, what you do. But something that we spoke about and something that you spoke about too is being an advocate for Micah. It has to be purposeful. It has to be have meaning behind it. you know, when people misunderstand him, I just don't want to sit back, but maybe stepping up and finding ways to help him to explain himself and help others to understand that too, because that could be difficult at times.
Yeah. We've heard some.
Yeah.
We've gotten some funny comments, and I say funny, I use that word lightly, so I'm not offensive to anybody. Because I know that a lot of times the things that some people have said just came from a place of ignorance. You know, they don't know any better. They're not educated. And so I'm going to help correct you when I got to correct you, you know, saying things like, oh, they'll grow out of it. Or I heard that there's a medication for that, or there's a cure. He can get a shot, or did you detox him? You should try detoxing him. Or was he vaccinated? I mean, we've heard everything under the sun. We're all a little bit autistic, or he don't look autistic, or he talks so well. You sure he's still autistic? You know, just all kinds of silly things. And so, you know, and not for nothing, when we learned of his diagnosis, we had to educate ourselves too. So I'm not even gonna front and act like we knew everything from day one, because we definitely did not.
No, not at all. But the goal stayed the same. You know, the goal was always the same, and that was to be set Micah up to where he can be successful.
Yes, you know? Absolutely. Not
just, you know, not just now, you know, as a child, but as he grows older. And that was always the goal. And I think that really is what really motivated us too, especially when we felt like we were hitting rough patches within our parenting with Micah. You know, it might have been days when, you know, you may felt like you were more of the disciplinarian, or you would just really had a short fuse, and vice versa. It was days I know for certainty when I would have a short fuse with Micah. But at the end of the day, the goal was always the same. Yeah. You know, we always wanted to make sure that we either rectified those situations at the end of the night, you know, with him, so that way he knew going to sleep and coming into the new day that, look, you know, we only want the best. Yeah. You know, it's like he gets hit. Micah really gets hit with so much because it's like, you know, then being thrust into being a big brother, you know, and we know what comes with being the oldest child. So much responsibility comes with that. Mm-hmm. Being a protector of your siblings, you know, taking on more responsibilities around the house. And Micah doesn't shy away from those things. You know, he's just like any other toddler or any other, you know, kid, really. You know, he complains, he has his moments. But despite being, you know, so many things that stacked against him, Micah excels and he succeeds and he excels and he does so good in areas that to this day really, you know, blow us away.
Yeah.
You know.
So, and he does it his way.
Yeah.
He
absolutely
definitely does it his way.
What's the guy's name? It's a singer. He does it his way.
Oh, wait,
Frank
a second.
Sinatra. Frank Sinatra. Little, he's a little Frank Sinatra.
My way. She have Micah sing it.
Wow.
Y'all have to hear him sing though.
Yeah, Micah can sing. Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's I don't know where it came from, but yeah, he's pretty awesome. I love, you know, Micah's creativity and just learning new things about him. Constantly learning new things about him. Yeah.
Yeah. And something that I think that stood out to me, really, just to like somewhat wrap it up, is something I heard recently is that autism is a lens. It's not a limitation. And so it just is just, you know, it's a lens into someone else's life, and not all individuals are the same, you know, and, you know, they're not set with these limitations put on them because they are no different from us. You know, they're just, you know, it just takes them time with certain things, and that's okay. We all ain't, you know, we all struggle at times, so, you know.
And this world is not made with the intention of being adaptable to those who learn differently. It is made to fit the standards of those who are neurotypical, those who, you know, do not think differently. They're not built to think differently, at least the way those who are neurodivergent do. And so people who are neurodivergent are constantly having to learn how to adapt to, you know, a society that doesn't have to learn to adapt to them. They are constantly having to put in twice as much work. So as Micah's parents, the least we can do is put in four times that amount of work to help meet our son where he's at, you know, learn the way he processes information, learn the way he thinks, and then provide whatever assistance we can along the way. Because it's not fair to just throw that all on him. You have to do it this way. You have to do it that way. Why? You know what I'm saying? Just because, you know, you're going a certain route and you figure this makes sense because it's a shorter route. This is a shortcut. But for them, this other route may be a little bit longer, but it makes sense for them. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. Mm-hmm. Let them go the route that they want to go. If that's what makes sense and that's what works for them, meet them with where they're at. So yeah. I think that that's definitely something that I've learned, you know, from being Micah's mom.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I've watched this boy deconstruct a peanut butter and jelly sandwich just to eat it.
He always deconstructs it, yeah.
So it's like, you know, that's just the way it works in his mind. That's the way it, it mm-hmm. makes sense in his head. And so if that's what works for him at the end, I think that's where, I think really what you're saying and like me giving that example is really at the end of the day, if you get to the goal, no matter how you get to the goal, as long as you get to the goal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's the main thing. And it takes a very special individual, a very set of individuals or parents, really, really, you have to be a really special type of person or parents to have a child that's on the spectrum, because life can get really difficult at times and life can be flipped up on its head. And so you have to readjust, you have to realign yourself. You really have to rewire everything that you know, or the way you were brought up, or what you thought about parenting, because it's just different. And that's okay. You know, it's cool. It's cool. But just one more time, just before we close, though, is just to give a quick shout out to those resources that we mentioned again. I know you mentioned Ms. Jess. So I don't know.
Yes, Ms. Jessie, the Reading Playground on Instagram is her handle. The underscore reading underscore playground, Jessie Larcher. Absolutely fantastic. Also, our ABA services, Helping Hands. Mm-hmm. Micah's cyber school is PALCS, Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School. They provide everything, all the books, all the tools, computer, headset, printer, ink, even internet reimbursement checks.
Yeah,
they are phenomenal and they really, really, really work with you. Again, I'll talk about that later. Children's Hospital, Philadelphia.
Yeah, and that's
where he was diagnosed and was even able to receive a speech tablet.
Yeah, you have to give him a speech tablet. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Hello, family and friends. Family and friends. Mama Bird, she was there with me the day he got his diagnosis. Mitter was there to drive us there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it does take a tribe.
Absolutely.
It takes a tribe. It takes the whole hood. Like, it takes everybody hands on to help when you have a child you are raising with disabilities. It is like, I can't stress that enough. Even if it's you just telling that person, like, you're doing a great job. That, boom, done. Done. Also, what really helps is when you go ahead and you do research on your own. We have had friends, like Terrence has reached out and like told me, like sent me stuff, and he's like, oh, like a video off of Instagram, and it has to do with autism. He's like, I never knew this, but this reminded me of Micah. That's so interesting. I'm gonna remember that the next time I see him. And I'm like, wow, like that really made an imprint on me, because that made me realize that a person was paying attention and being mindful of how they can interact with our son going forward. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah. That's no doubt.
Yeah.
Definitely encouraging. Mm-hmm. And then for me, it was just the One Resource podcast, More Than a Dad podcast, if you want to check that out. Like I said, all of the things that Brittany mentioned and everything that I've mentioned as a resource will be at the description portion of the podcast. And so you'll be more than welcome to select those links or look up their profiles on Instagram and maybe get Jess as a tutor. Maybe you get you a new listen with the dance podcast, or maybe homeschooling is something that you've been wanting and thinking about recently for your child. And so maybe Pauks may be the route for you to choose. But regardless, at the end of the day, no matter what we're doing, the goal is always the same. And that's to make sure that we lead successful men and, or rather, little girls and little boys to them becoming successful men and women in society and being able to lead these successful lives. And so really just as a closing, really just want to encourage other parents to give themselves grace, to keep moving forward, keep pushing forward. It's not going to always be easy. Parenting at times can be messy. It can be hard to understand. But when you have individuals who are willing to be in your corner and to really, you know, fight for you and fight for your child and be an advocate, it's really a blessing. So you hold on to those individuals tight, you keep them close, because you know, it's hard to find those type of people.
Definitely. And while our story may not look like some other stories, we just wanted to be able to share this with you so that I can give you just a small window of a glimpse of what it's like for an autism family. And at the end of the day, no matter what anyone's journey looks like, the important thing is to show support. And I think that every autism family can agree with that. We would love support. And that's the only thing that I could probably say every person would agree with, is just appreciating support. And that support may look different depending on what that person needs, and where they're at in life, but we appreciate so much you taking the time to hear this episode out. As we mentioned earlier, this is a really near and dear topic for us, so it will come up from time to time for sure. But we appreciate even just you listening that show support to our story and our journey with our awesome son. Pun intended.
Yeah, right?
Pun intended.
And so if this episode resonates with you, share with a parent, an advocate, or someone who just needs to know that they're not alone. But until next time, we thank you for joining the podcast. I am Andrew, or AJ.
I'm Brittany.
And this is
the Bird's Nest.